The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
10 years ago, we had an enormously significant visit to this country of Queen Elizabeth of Britain and her husband, Prince Philip. President Mary McAleese at the time was our person who met the royal family when they came here. And I'm delighted to mark the passing of Prince Philip today that we are joined by Mary McAleese. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. In your encounters with Prince Philip, what impressions did you form of the man?
Well, I had met him way back in 1995. That was my first meeting, long before I ever became president, when I had the opportunity to be part of a very small group who sat around their lunch table in Buckingham Palace talking about Northern Ireland. And so that was my first opportunity. I sat beside him, had a long conversation with him, and discovered for the first time that he was very well versed in Irish history, very well up on contemporary Irish politics, and more importantly, really interested in it, and very anxious to see what could be done by way of reconciliation. Bear in mind, this was long before the Good Friday Agreement, and they were just very anxious to know how could they help, what could they do, and that was where I realised and was told by, he told me about the fact that he was, of the two of them, he was the only one who'd ever been in the Republic, and that she, Her Majesty the Queen, had a real anxiety to go there and to make a contribution to, I call it a culture of good neighbourliness between the two islands. So over the years, I've met him quite a few times, and of course, during the royal visit, had the opportunity to talk to him quite a bit. But particularly the opportunity to, for Martin, myself, and Her Majesty the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, just to be in each other's company, just the four of us. And what you would notice about the two of them was just the sheer joy and love that they had for one another, the joy they had in each other's company. He, clearly a man of great civic consciousness, public duty, had dedicated his life to being her consort and to doing the best he could for her, to be with her, beside her, behind her when he needed to be, at her back and through, you know, with her through all the ups and downs. And after all those years, there was just a real ease between them. I liked him very much, I have to say. I had got to know him anyway through his work with the Duke of Edinburgh award scheme, because he was very anxious that the two schemes, the Goshka, which is our President's Award, and the Duke of Edinburgh's award, that they would work well and collaborate in partnership to offer young people in Northern Ireland from both sides of the community the opportunity to take on the challenges that the award offers. And he worked very hard at that over many years, very, very hard.
That's not very interesting, Mary, because the sort of caricature might have formed of Prince Philip over the years, with reports of alleged gaffes of things that he would have said at various functions when he was trying to be humorous, but allegedly may have caused offence to some people. And then you also would have had a different picture of him, might have been formed by people who would have watched fictional movies and television series like The Crown, where he would have been presented in a particular way. The way you talk about him there is very, very different to the way maybe our listeners might think of him.
Well, I mean, I also saw the humorous side, the slightly mischievous side that he had. I remember when he came to Dublin to present the Goshka Awards, I, having already previously, at his request, presented the Duke of Edinburgh Awards in Belfast, he came to Dublin and returned the compliment by presenting the Goshka Awards. But he was going into Ivy House, he and I were going into Ivy House, there were a group of journalists in behind a roped-off area throwing questions at him. In a kind of a cacophony, and one lady journalist came out from behind the roped off area, and he looked at her and me, and he said, more or less to everybody, he said, "Oh look," he said, "one has escaped." Now that's his way of disarming a kind of a situation, you know, that people were shouting questions at him. He wasn't in a position to answer them all, so he disarmed it with quirky humour. And who could look? Every morning that man got up for 80 years, you may say, every time he put his nose out through the door, there were cameras trained on him. And every move, every inflection, every way his eyebrows went, they were all subjected to scrutiny. And if occasionally he got irascible and let his personality shine through, I think most people would be very forgiving. It showed a human and maybe a humane side to him as well, you know.
Go back to his interest in Ireland there, please, because obviously his uncle, to whom he was very close, Lord Louis Mountbatten, was a regular visitor to Sligo and was murdered by the IRA in Mullagh Moor in County Sligo in 1979. Did he ever speak to you about that?
Well, what happened with that was that when we were planning the visit of Her Majesty the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh to Ireland, the four-day state visit, obviously the question then arose as to whether Sinn Féin would be involved in that visit and at what level and where they might meet Her Majesty the Queen, if they were meeting everybody else. I have to say that the palace took no point on this whatsoever. They raised no objections. We insisted that we would try our best to try and get Sinn Féin involved. They would come to that they'd be represented at the highest level, and both the Queen and Prince Philip were in favour of that. Regrettably, of course, it was Sinn Féin who decided that they wouldn't be involved, and really only for the Mayor of Cashel, who met her on her visit to Cashel. Sinn Féin stayed out of the visit for whatever reason. But a year later, Martin McGuinness met the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh in the Lyric Theatre in Belfast, and they had a private conversation, but the Duke of Edinburgh shook Martin McGuinness's hand. And I think the fact that he did that, and the fact that he would have done that also a year earlier in Dublin Castle if Martin McGuinness had been willing to come, which he wasn't, nonetheless it says something about him, doesn't it, and about his openness and his willingness to move beyond that sort of the battleground of history into a future of good neighbourliness where people forgave, moved on, and made friends across the most unlikely of gaps. So I think that's very telling.
Yeah, when you talk about making friends across the most unlikely of gaps, I mean, it is quite significant to think of you as somebody who was a girl, a young woman growing up in the Crumlin Road, ending up in a situation where you and your husband are sitting down for chats with the Queen of England and her husband.
Yes, and I grew up I grew up always in Protestant areas in Northern Ireland, in Belfast, where people were incredibly deferential, reverential to the Queen, including, I have to say, on the Catholic side. I mean, many, many people of my mother's generation, for example, for them, the celebrities of their era were the two young princesses, Margaret Rose and Elizabeth. They were regarded as their to some extent, their heroines, even though they would have been of a different political persuasion. So I grew up with that, and wondered when I first met her back in 1995 what kind of a person she would be to be up close with, because one of my jobs back in 95 originally was how I came to meet her first was that we were having a celebration of the Queen's universities, the Queen's colleges, including the Queen's University of Belfast, Cork and Galway. We were having a celebration for which she was the hostess, may I say, in St James's Palace. And I was bringing her around to meet everybody in the groups. And she couldn't have been nicer. She couldn't have been more everyday and pleasant. There was no edge. There was no grandiosity. There was no sense of talking to somebody, who was up on a very, very high plateau talking down to people. Quite the opposite. She was, as had been said to me by her master of her household, when I explained to him that I didn't do curtsying, and would that, and I had taken the opportunity the day before to go and see him and say, look, if I have to curtsy, if curtsying is obligatory, I get somebody else to do this job, because I didn't want to look like I was insulting her. I would have too much respect for her, yes. But I'd also have respect for my own position. And I explained to him why. But he said to me, look, don't worry. He said, it's going out of fashion anyway. He said, and she can handle anything. She is a pro. Those were his words. And he was right. She is. She's met everybody. She's talked to anybody and everybody. She maintains an interest and a curiosity no matter who she's talking to. And he did too. That was his great attribute, that coming along always in her wake, chatting. We remember the interface between the two of them and the fishmonger in the English market in Cork.
In Cork.
And how he set himself up for a joke, because he said that he said to the fishmonger, looking at a plate of fish cakes on which there was a huge sign saying fish cakes, he asked the fishmonger, what is in those? And the answer was, you're a fish. In other words, I don't expect And but there was huge laughter and banter, and he knew, I mean, Prince Philip knew in asking the question that he was setting himself up for a bit of crack, a bit of fun. And there was fun in him. And I'm sure over the many years, the long, long, long years that they were together and the many ups and downs they faced together, she was glad of his sense of humour, you know, when the doors closed and they were on their own.
Wasn't it remarkable what age he continued working to? I mean, we talk a decade ago when they were over, he was 89 at that stage. You went back, I think, didn't you, on a formal visit subsequently as well?
Yes.
It's remarkable that he gave this service and continued to do so, because it wasn't necessarily always the most exciting work, I'd imagine, for anybody of any age, let alone somebody of advanced years.
But he brought his best to it, never gave up. And interestingly, you mentioned that the last time I talked to him was at Windsor Castle when President Michael Dee and Sabina went on the return state visit to the United Kingdom and or to GB. And I was sitting, as it happened, I got the chance to talk to him because I was sitting beside him. And an interesting thing that I didn't expect in the conversation, but it came up because we started talking about all the problems that churches were facing and the scandal in relation to clerical child sex abuse and such, and that many people were walking away from the church. And he said to me he thought this was tragic because faith was so important. And he said it was so important to him. He said, where are we going to get our values and our principles from if we don't hold on to our faith? And I was really taken aback to find him so, you know, so spiritually driven. And it answered a lot of questions about him, you know, about his attitude to public service, his attitude to the role that he played to Her Majesty from the day and hour, not just that he married her, but more importantly, when she became queen and he surrendered what had been a stellar naval career. I mean, he had a stellar career and he could have had an even bigger stellar career had he stayed on in the Navy. But he gave all that up and he gave it up for her. And he gave it up for the country that he had adopted him. That's extraordinary.
One final thing, former President Mary McAleese. There is some of the usual stuff on social media today, sort of jibes at the British royal family and suggestions that anybody who expresses any sympathy or whatever understanding or interest is, to use that horrible phrase, a West Brit. But it is very interesting, isn't it, to see today the sort of, even particularly we mentioned Sinn Féin earlier, that both Michelle O'Neill and Mary Lou MacDonald, very much conscious of the fact that this is an important, significant event to many people on this island who regard themselves as British and respectfully acknowledge it as such.
I think it's important to do that. I don't think one has to be a monarchist to recognise both the goodness and the greatness in this man. I don't think one has to be a royalist to speak respectfully of him and admiringly of him, because I think he's entitled to respect and he's entitled to admiration. Almost 100 years old, a lifetime of devoted service. One can only think, for example, of how difficult it is now for his wife, who was always so used to having him around and having his counsel and, you know, the fun that he brought into her life and the intellect, because one of the great things I discovered was how both of them were extraordinarily well-read on Irish history and Irish politics, really very well-read. So he was very interested in what we were doing. And important, very importantly, and I think the two-state visit showed that, they were very anxious to ensure that they did their best to mend fences and create something different for young people for the future. And nobody can ever take away from him the work that he did on behalf of young people. I mean, the Duke of Edinburgh Award is a remarkable success story, not just, of course, in the United Kingdom, but right across the world, for the International Award. Is used to help young people stretch themselves, compete with their own perhaps lack of self-confidence, their worry about themselves in the world. And here's the Duke of Edinburgh Award saying to them, look, we can help you to really find your strengths and to build on those strengths and be whatever you want to be. There are literally millions of young people all over the world who have benefited from that, of all walks of life. And so nobody can ever take that from him. Why wouldn't he be entitled to respect this day? And those who claim that simply stating that, those who claim that who are critical of that, I think they should look to their own hearts, those hard hearts. we've suffered too much on these islands from hardened hearts. And I think that when Her Majesty the Queen came here with the Duke of Edinburgh, we saw people who came with hearts that wanted to be soft and wanted to create a culture of softened hearts.
Mary McAleese, former President of Ireland, thank you so much for being with us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.